Hello, this is Robin Hill and welcome to episode 67 of Eclectic City. The podcast which follows contains not only music, but also poetry and prose, which I've written over the years, much of it inspired by my travel all over the world. The opening piece is an extract from Pavan, a piece composed for soprano, flute, piano and duduk. Yes, you heard me correctly, duduk, an Armenian double-reeded instrument, which I'm very fond of. So, enjoy. Glaring Anomalies, Poems, Prose and Music by Robin Hill. Eternal Dance. I'm the rain and the wind and the sweet summer sun. I'm a name in the sand, I'm a figure of fun. I'm the dance in the trees, building up by degrees. I'm the eye of the storm, I'm the ice in the freeze. I'm the kestrel, the sparrow, the swallow, the quail. I'm a spirit of energy blazing my trail. I'm a maverick, lunatic, spendthrift and miser. And as I get older, I for sure get no wiser. Rebound. I kicked a ball into a wall. The wall, it kicked it back. I kicked a ball into a wall with a loud, resounding thwack. I kicked a ball into a wall for hours and hours on end. I kicked a ball into a wall when I could find no friend. King of the Wild Frontier. King of the Wild Frontier. Prince of the Strange Veneer. Queen of the nightlight flight, princess of the black and white, duke of the strange tattoo, lady of the high heel shoe, lord of the ring me back, duchess of the quick and quack, baroness of the eggplant blues, baronet of anything you choose, earl of the rise and shine, marchioness of the mist and pine, High Sheriff of the Nip and Tuck, Archbishop of the Try a Fuck, Man of the Match on Strike, Girl on a Motorbike, Marquis of Sadistic Bent, Marquis of the Big Big Tent, Knight of the Realm on Guard, Laureate of a Knightly Bard, Pontiff of all he surveys, disappears. Michael Mustard.
I'm old Mike Mustard, old job man. I leave no tools inside my van. I had a cracking dog called Tim, full of vigour and a vim. A little Yorkie was and all, a little bugger with a bow. I earned £2,000 a day and liked to go on holiday. Last year we went somewhere in Spain, but the wife Susan was such a pain. She really was a silly wench. She brought bloody Kevin, pardon my French. He's a lazy lad who stays in bed, and the way he sponges does in me head. I don't like the boy one bit at all. In fact, he drives me up the bloody wall. And while I'm there, I said to myself, I may as well fix that bloody shelf.
Dogs de Bordeaux. Those dogs de Bordeaux, those dogs de Bordeaux.
They're terribly, terribly snobbish, you know. Aloof and superior, one feels quite inferior when shaking the paw of a dog de Bordeaux.
Those dogs de Bordeaux, those dogs de Bordeaux.
They're terribly, terribly posh, don't you know. Such airs and such graces when eating their faces. Those wonderful, fabulous dogs de Bordeaux.
I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave this place where the breeze in the trees seems to whisper Chinese under peaceful skies like a gigantic frieze. Evening sun on the stone and my favourite keys. I don't want to leave this place where the autumn leaves and the winter begins with spring waiting patiently there in the wings and summer's arrival with swallows and things. I don't want to leave. Lisbon. Can we not have a reprieve and walk these streets on heavenly leave? No one here would be amazed, no one's eyebrows even raised. In street cafe or local's bar, in shopping mall or alien car, no recognition in this place, with just another stranger's face. You could win some extra time, avoid eternity's deadly rhyme. These vibrant streets could be your home. You'd be quite safe here on your own. You'd thrive and grow and learn to play on the guitar, the Fado way. Or must your clock be ever stopped and all your hopes forever dropped? I fear that is the case, and yet, now there's a face I can't forget. A part of my identity, a definition of an entity. I am diminished by your fate, and since you have become so late, in every city, old and new, I often have a look for you. Jazz Name Dropper. I had a beer with Chick Corea, played a shaker for Chet Baker, had several binges with Charlie Mingus, strolled in the park with Stanley Clark, bought pizzas and ate 'em with old Art Tatum, met the wife Mavis through Miles Davis, sailed in a vessel with Barney Kessel. Strolled on deck with Dave Brubeck, was dubbed glorious by Jaco Pastorius. I walked across Turin with Flora Purin, played jazz rock with Herbie Hancock, lived down the lane from John Coltrane, sold a telly to Stefan Grappelli.
But I never met Django Reinhardt.
But I did meet his son, Babik, one night in Southport. EasyJet. When travelling via aviation, avoid the mid-seat situation. If you value personal space and abhor the human race, if you'd rather not be crushed, and if your temper's easily pushed, for God's sake, choose an aisle-based seat where you can easily stretch your feet. Avoid the elbows of mankind if you need a true unwind. But if you really value sane, avoid the fucking aeroplane. C. Sforzando. In crew bar or in engine room or even officer's mess, a fracas or a rumpus is expected, I confess. In dockside bar, a jolly tar could oft-times start a brawl. With punches thrown from left to right, I'm sure it could enthrall. It's a matelot's right to start a fight, it long has been the case. The protagonists blindly slog it out with many a bloody face. But there's one station where altercation is much more deadly yet. I speak, of course, of a malevolent force, the female string quartet. The cellist with her vicious spike is quick to raise her ire. The viola player with strings of gut, her behaviour is quite dire. The first violin, whose next of kin are languishing in jail. The second violin, who for grievous affray is currently out on bail. Their bows are bashed, their teeth are gnashed, their strings are highly fraught. Spiccato, staccato, a mean marcato, could one day end in court. In killer heels, their girly squeals will pin you to the wall. A gruesome foursome, tall and awesome, whose features I recall. So seek karaoke or hokey-cokey, a ballroom dance or band. Forget the quartet or you'll regret. Just keep your music canned. Fight or Flight, homage to British Airways. Fight or flight, don't need this shite. When travelling through the darkest night, the check-in team are all on song. No way, that's a carry-on. My guitar, it seems to raise their ire. The situation's fucking dire. It's a 320 and will easily fit in the overheads, you stupid twit. I'm afraid that is not allowed. The flight is full. You see this crowd? OK, then you can count me out. I will not fly, I have no doubt. The captain must decide your plight. OK, who gives a flying shite? I'm a good guy. What's the prob? Is this worth more than your dull job? Beam me up and count me out. I just can't say what it's about. I come in peace to do my thing. You say I must remove the strings? Put me in the hole, but not my friend, who will survive me in the end. Finally, we're both on board. The whole thing was just quite absurd. The flight is not completely full. They really are so deadly dull. Guitar. Guitar, guitar, my special friend, your sublime tones will never end. You calm me. my darkest hour. You help my soul to find a flower. You are the antidote to hate, a benign voice of persuasive weight, a force of love abhorring war. What is it we are fighting for? Tiger Sea, written en route from Honolulu to Japan, somewhere in the North Pacific, March 2005. This wild, malevolent, livid sea is not quite where I want to be. Cocooned inside the luxury liner, I affect the pose of discerning diner. The Tiger Sea, wrong side of sane, spits angry foam against the pain. My fellow passengers take delight in witnessing this savage sight. They taunt the beast and sip their wine. Complacent, they just drink and dine. The audacity of the parasite boat to ride the tiger's back and float at 14 knots towards Japan is more than I can really stand. Will we arrive safe inside the bay, or will the wildcat claim its prey? The Cruiser. The lumbering Americans queue for food, and some can be extremely rude. The one in front is a top-class whiner who exults in the role of angry diner.
"You have no caviar,"
she screams, her pantsuit straining at the seams. Smoking with Dinosaurs. Smoking with dinosaurs, hanging with cats, making a music that isn't quite jazz. It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing, a rhythmic nuance with no ghost of a chance. Devoid of the usual cross-syncopation, delusions of grandeur exceeding its station. Smoking with dinosaurs, hanging with cats, making a music that isn't quite jazz. Evidently Cruiser Town, 2008. With sincere apologies to John Cooper Clarke. The bloody sun is bloody strong. This bloody shirt is bloody wrong. The bloody pool is bloody wet. The bloody quoits are on the deck. The bloody ports are bloody old. The bloody bargains are all sold. It bloody gets me bloody down. Evidently, Cruiser Town. The bloody bubble is bloody good. The bloody captain is a hood. The bloody band are bloody pissed. Each bloody cue they bloody missed. That bloody singer's bloody loud. The bloody punter's bloody wowed. Their bloody standing makes me frown. Evidently, Cruiser Town. The bloody morgue is bloody full. The bloody doctor's full of bull. The bloody nurse don't give a shite. Her bloody dress is bloody tight. The bloody cruiser's bloody old. The bloody scooters, bloody bold. They nearly knock you bloody down. Evidently, Cruiser Town. Who are you? This poem was written on the occasion of The Who playing in Bolton at the Casino Club in 1969. Messrs Entwistle, Daltrey, Townsend and Moon turned down a side street. The month is mid-June. The 16-year-old with a huge head of hair calms himself down with a pint of warm beer. His heroes have finally come into town in a Ford Transit van of the highest renown. They're fresh back from Woodstock to play the Northwest, to Bolton in Lancashire. Now who could have guessed? In less than an hour they will be live on the stage. As they end their set, they'll vent their rage. Drum kits will fly, guitars will splinter. Is this in fact an artistic winter? Not in the least. These guys are on top. Their zeitgeist, their muse is unlikely to stop. There's no substitute for my generation. No wonder we hold them in great veneration. When Naki eats Noki. When Naki eats Noki for tea, he usually combines it with brie, escargot and gratin, the pelt of a lapin, all cooked in a wok full of ghee. When Naki eats gnocchi for lunch, he adds hot paprika for punch, the yolk of a turtle, a fresh pinch of myrtle, and a French dwarfed banana, half bunch. When Naki eats gnocchi for brekker, he shares it with half the exchequer, foie gras and a lamb, and a full pot of jam does wonders to keep up his pecker. The Voyage. What pleasure is there in this life, removed from children and from wife? The leaden stone inside negates the epicure who serves the plates. Even terpsichore bites the dust when anchored in force wanderlust, invades the soul and drinks the flood, this vampire who delights in blood. Can there ever be a state to rescue me from bitter fate, where every day is cardboard Sunday and every night a morning Monday? This microcosm of the sea finds little resonance in me. I curse the hours until I'm free and look to when myself I'll be. Jutland Street. This poem is about a street in Manchester just behind Piccadilly Station. If you can get the chance, you must go there. It has a surprise. Off we go to Jutland Street. It's Olivino's special treat. We've talked about it for a while, and it never fails to raise a smile. What mysteries are lurking there? Dad will not say. It's just not fair. Will the houses scrape the sky? Will its beauty make us cry? Is there a joke shop on this street? Or perhaps a utopian retreat? Did famous artists once live there? Was it the home of Molière? Maybe an horrendous crime was committed there amongst the slime. Did a meteor once land here? Is there a toy shop or a fair? We'll soon find out. It's round the corner, to the brow of the hill. I tried to warn you. The Decreasing Divide. The ghosts of yesteryear grow more. They gently pound against the door. One wonders what the hell it's for. The dead, they taunt the living. The kitchen is a bombsite. Domesticity explodes, smashing crockery in its wake, flying forks and sundry saucers and a passing dinner plate. Shattered glasses whistle past in a frenzied shard malaise. Breakfast bowls such tortured souls in lamentable derange. This kitchen is a bombsite and the siren screams its cry. The kitchen is a bombsite. Will you wash or will you dry? Today's menu. With a quick burst of temper, the sea wind does flare and launches the menu high into the air. Propelled like a swallow in erratic flight, it hits the Atlantic and also the night. Consumed by the ship's inexhaustible wake, it sinks oh so slowly for history's sake. Consigned to the depths, it will languish and wait for the future to tell us what we had on our plate. Old Master. 36 years fast forward, and there you are again, behind me at the cash point, the most ordinary of men. With retrospective clarity, I see you for what you were, a cynical, fat, no-hoper we all addressed as Sir. My contributions to debates were dismissed as disruptive shouts. Positivity cannot blossom when assailed by burning doubts. I asked you how you're doing. You reply, "Not bad at all. As long as there's some cash for me inside this bloody wall." The concert in the Atlantic. Waiting in my padded cell and dreading the recital bell, the summoning of execution for which there is no absolution. Its outcome all depends on me, escape prohibited by sea. Check fingernails are all intact, check nerves that are severely racked. Check music is inside my head and rise up from my cabin's bed. The ship's laundrette. In the ship's laundrette, the gloves they're off. Thrown into the drum, they shrink in the froth. territories staked, garments removed, malicious striptease with desire unapproved. Dryers turned off in a grisly dance, spin cycles reduced to a fraction of chance. Detergent is king, deterrent the way. Now that is the best fun I've had all today. The next poem, To Oliver, is dedicated to my eldest son, Oliver. When he was a baby, he didn't like sleeping much, and this poem was a response to that. In roar of night, when frantic trees describe a wild tangential freeze, fingers tear with claw and bone as nails are ground against the stone. This night a spectre is abroad, a red-faced, cuddly little lord. His name is Oliver Hatfield Hill, and how we long to keep him still. This lack of rest, it makes us weep, if he would only go to sleep. A Walk on the Wild Side. Good morning, friends. Walk happily to where the lunatics roam free, to where the hot-wired wrecks are dumped and derelicts invariably slumped, to where the dogs perambulate and furtive figures sometimes wait, to where the wind is often bitter as it propels the rotting litter. Does the heron deplore these follies as he stalks the megastore trolleys? Does the fox give flying flips for his unhealthy diet of chips? Does the kingfisher really care about discarded underwear? Does the squirrel give a hoot for the abandoned Chelsea boot? Come on, friends, visit our park, but please don't go there after dark. The Dog and Rhinoceros. With apologies to Edward Lear. The dog and rhinoceros went to school in a second-hand sky-blue car. They thought it quite funny they didn't have money, just Marmite inside an old jar. The dog had a flute, the rhino a lute, and they played together all day long. And when they had finished, their chords were diminished, but both had composed a short song. But sometimes the rhino, when walking on liner, would pine for his homeland afar. He'd play his charango and munch on a mango and emit the most miserable wah. Oh, rhino, my friend, don't you see it's a godsend to explore in this alien land? The dog explained gently and somewhat intently, oh, rhino, just please understand. Considering this theory made rhino quite weary and soon he collapsed in a heap. He dreamt of marangos, milongas and tangos, and finally, plenty of sheep. He awoke the next day, and what could he say? The dog and his flute had both gone. He was left with his lute, but his voice was quite mute. Do you think at his age it was wrong? The Business Boys, written on a train between Manchester and London. They blather and twitter in monotonous tones, pushing their products they found under stones, megaphoning the passengers with tiresome campaigns, blandly thought out in their sad little brains.
Yeah, that sounds a good move. The app works so well, we've got nothing to prove. What does this mean at the end of the day? Sounds like a plan, I really must say.
They blather non-stop for well over an hour, show no sign of stopping and beginning to cower. Please shut the fuck up and sod off to sleep. Passengers squirming all over their seats. It finally stops. What a blessed relief. Euston is looming. I'm up from my seat. The Journey, written on a train between Southampton and Manchester. Rivers and bridges, meadows and ridges, telegraph poles and abandoned fridges. Momentum is building little by little, network of steel supported by spittle. The 145 takes a very sharp dive with a set syncopation which is burning alive, lurching for home with a blink of the eye, flashing through stations that one day will die. Skeleton staff at the barrier wait,
Passengers lope with a foolhardy gait. The monster is sadly unable to halt. The buffers will buffet the carriage's vault. They explode in the air in a wreckage of fate. The driver impaled by a shard of steel plate. This is a short story which was also written on a train. It's called Momentum. The man was on the train. His hair was turning autumn and his mind was in the deepest winter. The speeding wheat fields, punctuated by black crows, blurred by. His veins were electric wires. It was mid-morning and the sun illuminated and bathed the whole landscape magnificently. The ostinato rhythms of the frenzied carriages provided an eccentric accompaniment to his mental wanderings. He was the hunted. He was the quarry. It had just begun. He felt the ice anticipation of the arrester's muscular hand on his shoulder. He knew it would come, like a step in the wrong direction on a frantic highway. The whistle shrieked in a tortuous tonality. Let it end soon.
Tickets!
The cobwebbed grey collector shuffled into the compartment. The man was its only occupant.
Tickets!
He repeated. The man could not produce one. He feigned a search and then spoke shakily to the collector. I'm sorry, I seem to have mislaid it.
What is your destination?
Arles.
75 francs.
Yes, of course. The man paid his fare and was given a ticket which issued from the collector's tarnished machine. With that, the collector stared at the man and then left the carriage and the man was again alone. He felt as if drowning, as if the train was sinking in a blur of oppressive water. Then blackness and rushing in the ears. The carriage sounds amplified, now resonant and of increasing menace. Let it end. Please let it end. The train began to slow. A station was approaching. As the engine reluctantly slowed, the man saw them on the platform, men in uniform with stone faces and dull glass eyes, men with rifles and pistols, men shod in heavy boots and long overcoats. They were about to board the train. The sun had disappeared, replaced by a dull and stifling stillness. The woman entered the carriage. She was of medium height with thick, muscular legs. He hated them. She was expressionless as she sat at the opposite end of the carriageway from the window. She lit a cigarette and swirls of gossamer danced in an ethereal mist. The man heard the heavy tread of military boots in the corridor. There were ugly staccato voices loudly shouting in an incomprehensible language. The door was slung violently open. They seized the woman and dragged her from the compartment. Her incandescent, lipsticked cigarette end glowed in a deadly death throe on the floor. Why had they taken her? The train creaked, complaining into life, and left the station behind. The man still had the fear in his mouth and the foul smell of death in his nostrils. The train gathered momentum. It was now approaching early evening. The man was sleeping. Stefan Olev entered the compartment. He sat opposite the man. He smiled to himself as he opened his briefcase. He retrieved the newspaper and began to read. The man stirred but remained unaware. Stephen was a bald, small, middle-aged man with a twinkling, piggy eye. He suffered occasionally from gout, which was exacerbated by his love of port and good food. The train now beat a rapid bolero rhythm as it traversed the increasingly arid landscape. The man awoke with a jolt and was surprised to see Stefan Olev, his friend from Paris.
Stefan, what a coincidence.
This is no coincidence. I am here on business.
Business? What business?
I have been sent to apprehend you and to bring you to justice.
Justice?
The people are baying for your blood. The game is over. You are finished.
The man felt ice fingers around his frantic heart. His mouth was arid and his temple throbbed and his mind was in free fall.
Ah, Stefan, I have money. We can come to an agreement.
You are no longer the president. You are finished.
The man lunged forward and slit the throat of Stefan Olev. He fell forward, spurting hot, random blood. The man sprang to his feet and quit the compartment, leaving Stefan dying on the floor. He ran down the endless corridor. He must leave the relentless train far behind. He entered an empty compartment, shut the door and pulled down the shutters. His pulse pulverized his tortured ears. He felt like the magnetic center of the universe, attracting unwelcome attentions from all directions, powerless to deactivate the unrelenting magnet. He opened the outer compartment door. The countryside tore by. He jumped into the seething blackness. Nothing, nothing at all. All was calm.
Electric prism. All rainbow-coloured birds flock together in a spiral of energy-coiled springs. She felt the electric charge and her mind exploded into violet light and fluorescent clouds of green harmonies. A web of intricate design captured her soul and rendered it immobile. A synergy of yellow cactus flowers devoured her succulent breasts, and she slept in a nightmare cavern. The sounds of torment were never really distant and pervaded her consciousness with purple thunder. Plimsolls of her desire, as warm and rich as red wine, intoxicated her dreaming state. Suddenly, she heard Ella Fitzgerald burst into balloons of writhing melodies. "I'll take Manhattan too," she thought. And Staten Island, and Greenwich Village. Her tourniquet of suppression was truly rent in twain, and her long, endless limbs exploded into regular, orgasmic eruptions.
"Have you seen my little dog?"
"No, I haven't had the pleasure," she replied. The church bells tolled their mournful monody. The children's laughter was as distant as a train across the country, and as infrequent as a vole in paradise. The shots rang out and the man hit the ground, walking and staggering into shadows of violet holes. "I hope they do return to the dark side of the moon and beyond the future galaxies which permeate the Milky Way. I shall not be present or past or tense. I am the breadbasket of Europe and the bane of civilization." The cars swarm past, and then nothing. Mr. Mad was incorrigibly bad. Just imagine the livers he'd eaten and had. A true psychopath as he vampired through life, without the distraction of trouble and strife. Mr. Mad was a mad fuck indeed. Especially with victims who died and did bleed. Profusely in torrents collapsed on the floor, a truly horrific mad metaphor. Mr. Mad, a necrophiliac, a mad connoisseur with a corpse in the sack. As he plundered and raped and his victim did bleed, he implanted his irrevocable seed. Duck House. I wish I had a duck house within my spacious grounds. Pharyngeus and mallard would make such happy sounds. Feathering their nests and mine, you must not take offence. As a parliamentary member, I may claim such just expense. The Ants of Andalusia. Casa del Tigre, Andalusia, 2005.
The Andalusian ant is a clever little beast. He'll coordinate his friends and they'll carry off a feast. He anticipates antipathy from passing human feet by hiding in a crack or hole. He's really quite discreet. His antics are so antiquated, but why then should he change? His story of survival is really rather strange. For Antony and Cleopatra ruled the streets of Rome. This cunning little insect had made the world his home. The anthem of the ants, it is proclaimed in every town. Teamwork is our watchword. On its antonym, we frown. From Antarctic to Antilles, one can find this wily bug, whose puzzling behaviour can make entomologists shrug. Here in southern Spain, all insect life is rife. But if you see the giant killer bee, then run to save your life. Miss Bimps. Mozart's dog was called Miss Bimps, a name revered by musical gimps. An English terrier she was by breed, and bloody awful on the lead. Our chocolate Labrador was christened Coco. But little by little, and poco a poco, we changed her name to Miss Bimpearl, cos she's a dotty little girl. Wolfgang's dog was called Miss Bimps, and he expired dictating Timps. Samba Dream. Samba Dream, you were so serene, you took my breath away. Silver skies were in your eyes. I quickly looked away. In the rhythm of the night, a distant vision of delight. Jungle vines growing through my mind, the undergrowth of time. So sublime, will I ever find a spirit of your kind? Will this reverie come true? Can this melody be you? I hope some day it will return. I hope some day that you will learn what I feel for you is something real. That dream forever it replays through the endless stream of days. Will I ever see your face again? I hope some day it will return. I hope some day that you will learn what I feel for you is something real. That dream forever it replays through the endless stream of days. Will I ever see your face again? Samba Dream, you were so serene, you took my breath away. Silver skies were in your eyes, I quickly turned away. In the rhythm of the night, a distant vision of delight. Canción lingers on, in my heart resounding. Candles light in the night, with a love astounding. Now you're gone, but your song is all that I'm hearing. Day on day it will play, in the evening nearing. Canción. Please be gone. Pain is real and living. I can't try to deny it's pure joy you're giving. Now you're gone, but your song is all that I'm hearing. Day on day it will play as the evening's nearing. Cantheon lingers on, in my heart resounding. Candles light in the night with a love astounding.
Psychopath on the cycle path. A psychopath walked down the cycle path at the end of a tiresome day. The psychopath stalked down the cycle path, searching for his prey. He walked in isolation, footsteps crunching on the ground. He enjoyed their regularity and their pleasing rhythmic sound. A psychopath walked down the cycle path. Perhaps he got it wrong. Perhaps a better hunting ground would be amongst the throng. Eclectic City was a Hill House production.